You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM and translator K282BH in Philomath at 104.3 FM. And we're streaming at the top of our lungs on www.kboo.fm. Thanks for tuning in.
When the dawn breaks in Jacksonville, it awakens a magical city with a style all her own. The right place to be today and tomorrow.
Look at Jacksonville. Look at all we've done, how far we've come. We're Jacksonville. Yes, we're going to spread that news. We're the one to choose the town that's right for you.
Special report. K-Boo. Hey. Hey, Paul.
What's up? Hi.
Did you forget my name?
Well. What's up?
What's we're back name? On Blooming Universe.
Oh, hi.
Yeah. Although it's Monday night. Nothing. What are days?
Nobody knows anymore.
What's time? This is a special bonus edition of our Winterland Fest coverage. If you've been tuning in, we went to a music festival in Jacksonville, Florida.
Yep.
COVID. One of the performers that I didn't get a chance to talk to, but yeah, got to know her on Instagram. Her name is BB Deluxe, and we did a little phone interview.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
She had some cool stuff to say, excited to air this. So here is our chat with BB Deluxe, a performer at the Winterland Festival in Jacksonville, Florida. Okay, hi, Sorry. Welcome to the Blooming Universe. We're talking with BB Deluxe from Jacksonville, Florida. Hi, BB.
Hi, how y'all doing?
Good. Just hanging out in the basement, trying to figure out how to record phone calls.
Oh, fancy. They don't let us have basements here. They get too wet.
Yeah, they get wet. I actually did have a basement in Jacksonville, but it was a very creepy house, and the fact that I had a basement just really added to that, since, you know. Yeah. We can't.
Ooh, not during hurricane season.
Yeah, I don't know how we had one. Season. Yeah. Cool. So thanks for talking to me today. Yeah, once we got to talking on Instagram, I was like, oh my God, I really need to interview you about Jacksonville and Winterland Festival.
Yeah, DA Kids.
DA Kids.
It's the closest thing I'll ever have to a sorority.
Yeah. Well, especially for people like us, for sure. Do you mind if I repeat what you said in our Instagram chat about kids who went to DA or Douglas Anderson?
Oh, sure. Okay, sure.
So that you could tell by looking at each other that we've been emotionally abused with art. I love that so much. Do you want to talk about that more, like your experience? Because you went to you graduated in 2008, and I graduated in 2002. And we talked about it in our last episode because there was a couple other DA grads that, in bands that we talked to at Winterland Festival. So I'd like to hear like your quick take on Douglas Anderson.
Douglas Anderson is a beautiful, wonderful school. I am so thankful for the experience and the education that I got from there. And I, you know, it's a full testament to me and my work ethic today as an artist. But I mean, every kid who goes to DA, it's like the thing that you love and you're passionate about becomes this like super rigorous, regimented thing that you attach to your self-esteem. so it's like, and I mean, DA was known for a while. I don't know if it's, I can't really speak for it today, you know, because I'm not hanging around high school. but it was known for being a place where your art teachers were very intense and very direct about what they wanted. And I think all my friends who went to DA kind of had to have a period of rediscovering art on their own terms.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still kind of going through that. Mm-hmm. I was a musical theater film student, but mm-hmm. I was super annoying, and I badgered my guidance counselor and administration. So I basically, because I was just never content in one place, so I took everything but classes in instrumental,
mm-hmm.
Which is ironic because now I consider myself a musician first.
Mm-hmm. I had a very similar experience at Douglas Anderson where I was originally a technical theater major because I was just kind of like sneaking in through the back door basically. And then I changed over to visual art, and then like you didn't ever play any kind of instrumental music or like play a musical instrument until I was 27. And so I was just curious what, for a fellow person who's avoided it for a while, what did finally drive you to start making your own music?
Well, I loved it. I always heard music in my head. I constantly listened to music. And I loved singing, and I think I'm leaving out a whole part. I took piano lessons when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I totally forgot about that. Like when I was like a young kid, I took piano lessons, and they put like an old like out of tune piano that someone just gave us for free in our house one day, and I used to just pluck out chords on that, like not playing like with any kind of technique or anything. And then I think going to DA, I got to know like some accompanists. I'll name drop them.
Go for it.
One of them is his name was Jacob Edwards. He recently passed away,
mm-hmm.
and the other one is Jacob Merritt, a guy I knew my entire life, and they kind of like and Bri Mao, I think his name was. Mm-hmm. I always try to remember people that play piano with me because that's really important. Jerry Nielsen and AJ Neer, also two guys that I play piano with. I am doing such a terrible job at answering the question. Oh my god.
No.
Not
at all.
Well, these are all people who like I watched, and I watched like play piano, and I think just being a vocalist, you observe and you learn. You know, where your pitch is, and you learn how, you know, I could sight read and do all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
My love of synth music started early, and learning how to play that for myself really officially happened probably back in like 2015 when mm-hmm. my husband bought me a little MIDI keyboard,
mm-hmm.
and I plugged it into my computer and started learning how the sounds worked, and I think that's when I really like developed as an artist.
Cool. That's a great segue into my next question. Your most recent album is the Deluxe Enterprise, so I just wanted to see if you wanted to speak on that. Tell us like what was the inspiration behind it, what kind of themes does it draw on, how the production worked, whatever you feel like talking about on that.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that was like a lot of questions at once.
No. I'm excited. The Deluxe Enterprise is my debut EP, and I had always wanted to make music, and I had kind of been planning this for years and years. And I finally just, you know, I realized I was gonna turn 30, and it's like, even though age doesn't mean anything, when you're about to turn 30, it means everything some reason. And so I said, before you turn 30, you need to release that, you know, music that you've been wanting to release this entire time. Like, throughout every step of my career, I've always in my mind known that I wanted to release music. And so I wanted to do an album that was just about my experiences. I don't think that I noticed that there was a rise in the number of trans performers who were getting success as themselves, with Kim Petras and Sophie, and I said, you know, that I and Tammy, mm-hmm. Tammy T, mm-hmm. And I just realized that I had a unique experience that I wanted to document in a musical arrangement that I enjoyed, so I just made it. And you know, I love pop music. I'm highly inspired by the early 2000s, that like pop R&B fusion moment that happened, where every pop song was like just a club hit, and then in the middle half you had a really excellent rap interlude. And you know, TLC is a major inspiration to me, and ugh, Lisa Left Eye Lopez is the greatest rapper that ever lived, as far as I'm concerned.
I love her so much. Oh my god, yeah, she is my idol for sure. Lisa, she's just so crazy and tiny, and I love her.
Well, it was such a shame, because the pop landscape changed to be a place that was very pro-rap, but there wasn't, you know, she was frequently edited out of radio play, so she challenged the other members of the group and said, you know, let's all release a solo project and see who does the better one. And I've listened to all three, like, Lisa gives you the best.
I didn't
like,
even know the other two had them. I don't know.
They have their own kind of turns, solo endeavors, and it's just Lisa slapped, and she knew how to write a hook, and like
just the cover art of her solo album.
Yeah. Oh my god. So and she understood the visual direct. I'm always intrigued by the members of pop groups that are iconic. Who was the one that was driving the aesthetic?
Mm-hmm.
And it was Lisa for them, because she was frustrated by the. By the early period, she wanted to look futuristic. So by the time we got No Scrubs, it was such a moment, because she had been planning that since the early 90s. And I recently found out that Jerry Halliwell, Ginger Spice, was sort of the creative lead of the Spice Girls, more or less. She was the one that was really pushing them.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason she left is because they wanted to make a change in the style of music they were doing. And I consider myself a popologist.
You're definitely wow.
I'm really nerdy and academic about pop music. And it's annoying, because at the end of the day, it's just pop music, you know. But I find that whole phenomenon that happened in the 90s, where we merged consumer culture and pop music. Like, and that had always existed, but it was like, it was this hyper thing. Like, Britney Spears, no one had even heard her music, but everyone heard about her right before she was released, because Jive Records marketed her like you would a new toy or a Disney movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were tie-ins everywhere. So the reason I named my EP The Deluxe Enterprise was out of this idea that all pop music is in some way... it's based on nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on the idea of selling you something.
Uh-huh.
And I liked the idea of, you know, my whole thing is the opposite of that. It's entirely run by me, and you know, on donations and scraps from my day job and my gigs. And you know, my husband helps out massively. It's such an independent thing that I found it ironic to call it the Deluxe Enterprise, because it's you know, it's such a it's so not that it's but
yeah.
Pop has been built around this idea of capitalism and excess and slapping your name and logo on everything and burying an image into somebody's brain of what you look like. And mm-hmm. so that's why I got rid of all the content on my Instagram when I released my debut EP. Like all my friends were shook because I had ran a drag queen Instagram
mm-hmm.
for like 4 years, and then suddenly it was all gone. And I
wow.
was kind of like, all right, here's my color scheme, here's my music, here's where can you get it, this is what we're doing now.
Cool. That's cool to see, like, that dedication.
Thank you.
You're awesome. You keep bringing up the next thing I want to ask you. So, in addition to being a musician, you're also a drag performer. And are you still doing that, or?
Well, funny you should ask.
Or if you could just speak on your drag career. So,
my drag career was before Corona. I mean, honestly, yeah. I say that tongue in cheek, but we really are at this point going to be looking at things pre and post Corona, because you know, the drag industry as itself, it has been hit massively at mm-hmm. every end of the spectrum. You know, before coronavirus happened, there was this hierarchy of Drag Race girls who are on TV and, you know, girls who are at the bar at home. And even though there is a difference in the amount of exposure, you know, the Drag Race has encountered kind of some really rough controversy, and they've been hit by coronavirus enclosures just like everybody else. So everyone's just kind of not really sure what the future is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So before coronavirus, I started doing drag back in 2009, and it was just for shits and giggles. Back then, drag was you get high, you drink, you know, some Four Loko, and you go to the club, and your friends basically just throw money at you so you can buy more Four Loko. But somewhere in that journey, it became this thing where drag had always been this very niche but specific idea of, like, in Jacksonville, of being a female illusionist, being like highly polished and really beautiful and doing drag pageants, and just kind of staying in the one spot, which was the gay bar. And because I couldn't get a gig in those kinds of places when I started, because I didn't shave my beard or my body hair or any of that stuff, because that wasn't what it was about to me. It was about performing, because I was a DA kid and just mm-hmm. really annoying and had to constantly be on stage.
Mm-hmm.
So me and the group that I did drag with, we started doing gigs at like punk clubs and like other bars where you didn't see drag queens. And so we would just do these ticketed events, and you know, those people didn't have anything to compare it to, because they weren't going to see the drag show. You know, they were just like, you know, like punks and music people, and you know, it's like performing at places. Rain Dogs was a spot where we did a lot of our early shows, and
mm-hmm.
TSI back in the day.
Oh,
and,
boy, yeah.
And The Norm was this like little dyke bar.
Yeah.
We built our everybody got a Norm story.
Yeah, that is an old bar.
Yeah. It is now currently Archetype. Mm-hmm. and they do good stuff there. So over the span of what is time anymore, you know what I mean? Like over the span of several years, the drag bubble got, like, drag became more known throughout pop culture, because RuPaul's Drag Race was on TV. So mm-hmm. like my audience, and I basically made a decree that I was going to work with other people that couldn't get booked at the regular bars,
mm-hmm.
you know, at the regular gay bar, you know. So basically just a band of misfit drag queens that didn't fit into a mold, and we were like, hey, we're ready to do a show. And eventually we got to a point where we outgrew some of the venues we were at because of just size, just our audience got bigger. So we started performing at the lovely, legendary, infamous Metro Entertainment Complex right at the end of 2016. And ever since then, I have hosted, all the years run together, but I've hosted basically a show every Friday night there. There would be times when I'd be like out of town and I would take off to do another gig out of town, but basically every Friday night for the last 3 years, I was hosting a drag show.
Wow. Cool.
Oh my God. Yikes. Oh, that's really intense to just say.
Yeah,
and after a while, like, so basically me and my husband created the Glitter Bomb Show, which is a curated themed drag show. We've done all kinds of great stuff. We did all the films of John Waters one time. My favorite show we ever did was Night of a Thousand Joan Cusacks.
Yes.
And you know, Nickelodeon Summer. And
oh, wow.
We went from doing like one themed show a month to two themed shows a month to a themed show every Friday because we were just bored. We didn't want to be there if we weren't, like, you know, making it, doing too much, you know. So and now nobody is performing in the bar anymore because all the bars are shut down.
Yep.
And nobody really knows. See, it's like, even though they'll open the bars back up, there's not many drag queens who have the luxury of saying, like, oh, I work on a salary, you know. It's gig economy and you're a 1099 and you know, there's no promise that when the ban is lifted, if some of these establishments are still going to be around where drag queens are working, you know what I mean? It's like a nightclub, gay bars are already on the decline nationally, so it's like you close these institutions for 3 months, are they still going to be there?
Yeah.
Are you going to have a job? So I think every drag artist right now is kind of considering where's the next step. And an ironic twist, I, before all this happened, had been sort of struggling with drag because I'm a trans woman. And while there are lots of trans women who are also drag queens and they don't have issue with it, I was feeling uncomfortable often while performing. If I wasn't doing my music, if I was lip syncing a number, or if I was like just doing some karaoke track, that was the other reason I started making my own music, is because I was tired of performing other people's music.
Yeah.
I my favorite thing I did in my drag career was I developed a lounge act with my very dear friend AJ Neer. And I do a lot of covers of songs, and that's fun, but often that's not the case. Often you know drag gigs are, they're rough, man. Like, it's like you can have really good ones and luck out, but often it's like they're really late at night, you're not getting paid a ton. Everybody's really intoxicated, and I don't even drink. There's so often you're in a place where people are amused because they're looking at a man wearing a dress and that's funny to them. And that's tough. That's really tough because it's like, you know, you can only be so strong. And I think people, this is where it gets really complicated. And this is where it gets like polarizing because, I think that, drag is difficult because it originated by being the only thing that trans women could do to generate income outside of sex work. Because trans women were isolated to the dredges of society. And so in order to, like, get any kind of ground in something, you did sex work, which is an honest living, or you performed at the clubs, or you did both. You did both. You performed at the clubs. And the idea was, you know, there wasn't this TV show where they, like, were being like, look how normal my life is and look how normal and cute I look at a drag. Like, you lived a life that was entirely at night. Your day life was a mystery. And the whole thing was that was the only place where you could, you know, reign supreme. And there is an element to be said today about, you know, queer people, you know, people who were assigned male at birth or whatever, what have you. No, I'm just going to say queer people in general. Like, that, not, sex doesn't even matter. It seems like the only place where queer people, trans people, or gender variant people are allowed to be is competing against each other as superhumans. It's like, in order for us to be seen as valid entertainers, valid performers, we have to be wearing impossibly tall heels. We have to be wearing padding tucked into like four pairs of pantyhose. We have to be wearing a bodysuit. Our hair has to be perfect and huge. We need to have a nail on every single finger. Our makeup has to be absolutely immaculate. We're not allowed to sweat. We have to smell good while we're doing backflips and telling jokes and lip syncing a song perfectly. It's like, in order to be recognized, in order to be given a spot on national television, in order to get success for what we're doing, we have to literally turn ourselves into superhumans in a way that's like fucked. I'm not sure if I can say that, but
we're late. You can fucking shit all you want.
Okay. It's tough, and it's like, yes, it's misogyny. It's misogyny rearing its head in a weird way. It's basically like, we got through this wave where we're like, okay, women don't have to wear high heels to go to work. Women don't have to do this to go to work. Women should be on the same equal thing. And then this is just an offshoot of that. It's like, why do I have to essentially put myself in great discomfort and pain? And that's the joke with drag that like has been around forever. It's like, oh, y'all can do better than that. I've got my dick duct taped between my legs and my balls hurt and all hair and I'm in pain and I'm still doing it. It's like, why do we have to sacrifice that much to be recognized as talented individuals?
Exactly.
Why are we having to do all this shit? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's and then, you know, you say that to girls and they think that you're making it about them. You think that you know, you're allowed to like doing that stuff, but I've been backstage, these girls are tired and they're hurt and they're in pain and they don't want to do it no more.
Yeah. I mean, as a cis,
the drag bubble burst.
As a cis woman, I don't do any of that shit. Like, and it's weird too, because I don't feel like I, like, you know, measure up as a woman. Like, just in like a women's room, I'll be like washing my hands and looking around at all the other like cis women that do put on a lot of makeup and high heels and stuff, and I'm just like, I still kind of look like a kid around them, you know? And I'm like, what is being a woman, you know? Like, it's a crazy thing, you know?
That's why I tried to create a drag atmosphere. No, it's exactly that, though. It's exactly that, because I find myself comparing myself to other trans women sometimes, and I have to pull myself out of it and be like, ooh, breathe, girl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's this idea that you have to be so performed. That's why I created a space where I wasn't making these rules, and people still get kind of confused by it, because it's like, they'll be like, what kind of show is this? What do you mean, what kind of show is this? It's a show, just watch it.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, is this a drag king show? Is that a drag king or a drag queen? It's like, why does it matter to you? Like, what is the thing that you need to know? Like, mm-hmm. why do you... that's why I've never instilled a rule. Like, I've never in my life said, because it used to be back in the day at some of these places, and some places are still like this, where they're basically like, you need to be wearing nails, you need to be wearing heels, you need mm-hmm. to be, you better not have any rips in your pantyhose. Like, they run them through the ringer telling them what to do, and it is what it is. But that's why I've never been particular about anything, because I don't care what you look like. I'm not here. It's not the Maury Povich show back in the 90s. It's not Ricky Lake. I'm not sitting here trying to say who's a man, who's a woman. I don't care about any of that. And I think that a lot of people have had to address the toxicity, because now that, you know, now that gay men and gay women have been kind of ingrained into, you know, we're not all the way there, but now that there's been this like level playing field of like, okay, you've got marriage equality, okay, you can't be discriminated against in most places. We're not all the way there yet, as far as I'm concerned, but that's a different conversation. But it's like, now we've learned that you could be gay and terrible. It's
yeah.
So now we're having to really address some of the psyche behind things like drag, because now drag is bigger than ever, but RuPaul won't let trans women compete on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and then you say, oh, they should have their own show. Mm-hmm. Why? You know, why? And then at the end of the day, because they do, it's one of those things where, as a trans person, I know, just based on my own experience of just living, your brain won't stop going dick and pussy until I tell you which
yeah.
one. But you don't believe that about yourself, so you're going to come up with every single barrier to not acknowledge that you're a little too fixated on dick and pussy. And the thing is that's your problem. It's not everyone else's problem.
Yeah.
Everyone is so focused on who's got a penis, who's got a vagina. And you say trans to some people, and they're like, what kind of trans do you mean? Why do you need to know? Why do you need to know? It's and I don't understand why in drag, which is supposed to be this theoretical like rejection of gender tropes, roles in societies, why are we embracing it so heavily? Why are we so committed to this idea of drag queen looks like this? What does drag queen mean? What are you entertained by? See, that's the thing. At a drag show, you'll get like people who like to watch a good performance. And then you get another group of people who are people who like drag specifically. And then you get a group of people who are entertained by weird plays on gender and people dressed like a woman talking about a dick. And then you get people who don't know what the hell is going on and they're trying to put it together.
Yeah.
And it's such a fucking minefield producing a drag show, let alone hosting it and trying to perform in it. It's
yeah.
I like music because my music speaks for itself. I think if you listen to my EP and you don't know what I'm about, then you weren't listening to it and you were never going to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like I can tell you more about myself, more about who I am, and honest understanding through songs I've written rather than you know, but sometimes mm-hmm. it's not even that fucking deep. Like the best drag shows I've ever done. This all sounds like I'm resentful of like
not at all
my drag career.
No,
I love what drag has provided me, and I love drag. I've enjoyed seeing all these live performances people are doing from their rooms, because now that you've stripped away the element of people running their mouth at the bar and people relying on people bringing their friends to yell real loud for them, or like people doing tricks and stunts, or relying on everybody being fucked up while they're watching the show and remembering it differently, everyone's had to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had to think like, what is my performance when you remove the ambience?
Wow.
You know, and the girls have provided, the ones who I knew would provide have provided, you know, it's Untitled Queen, Cat Sass, these are all girls who should be watching, Florida Man, just countless, Cat Wilderness, all these girls
mm-hmm.
have started this new thing, and I've enjoyed watching it. I'm at a place now, though, where I'm less about wanting to perform other people's music and more about wanting to perform my own,
mm-hmm.
and less about creating this dual identity of this is me when I'm in drag and this is me when I'm not in drag, and just kind of meeting that in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think your music falls into that? Like, what's the difference between you performing your music and the difference between you performing in drag?
I would consider like a drag gig is like, if I'm, I don't know, it's tough. It's the line for me is usually, is my music playing? Am I singing into a microphone? Have I done a sound check? Am I, you know, it's,
yeah.
'Cause often it's like you get there and people are like, yeah, you can sing your song, and you're singing into a wireless microphone that's giving you hella feedback, and
mm-hmm.
and your levels aren't right, and it really just kind of, and you're not performing for people who are there to see it. I this is the cute answer, is synthetic hair versus human hair. If I'm wearing synthetic hair, I'm doing drag. If I'm wearing human hair, I'm
no?
doing something else.
Okay, cool. I'm cool. Well, you
yeah.
win the award of seriously answering every question before I asked it. Like, not in, I mean that as a high compliment. I'm just like, well, for kind of wrap it up, although I could seriously talk to you for an hour upon hours.
Oh my God! Same.
But for the sake of this show, just to wrap things up and be a little silly and lighthearted, since the whole world is dying and everything's depressing. If you're a public sub enthusiast, if you would like to tell us your favorite public sub toppings or your favorite public sub, whatever the fuck you put in a public sub, or what you think is your most quintessential favorite Jacksonville food, like just. If someone had never been to Jacksonville and you were going to take them somewhere where they could only go in Jacksonville, where would you take them?
Oh my God, this is actually a tough question because I have been a vegetarian since 2017.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to just say, first of all, just to make sure that there are no ill feelings, I will recommend 100% Murray Hillbilly. It is a great vegan restaurant in Murray Hill, and it's vegan comfort food, so you can get all kinds of really good burgers. You can get mac and cheese. I've tried a lot of Murray Hillbilly. It's a very nice place. The inside's great when you can get back into it. It's great. So I just wanted to get that out of the way to say, as a vegetarian, that's my recommendation. Also, Sushiko in Avondale has an entire vegan sushi menu. So those are my two recommendations for other vegetarians.
Mm-hmm.
So any other vegetarian Jacksonville knows that that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm glad to hear that there was like no vegetarian restaurant when I left. There was Heartworks, and then they were like closed by the time I left.
Like. I'm sure nobody's going to raise their pitchfork at me for missing somebody, but if I could answer your question about a public sub, before I quit eating meat, the best public sub is a chicken tender sub.
You're right.
Just that is known. Mm-hmm. And if you are a meat eater and you're coming to Jacksonville and you want to taste what Jacksonville tastes like, Jacksonville actually does have a unique sandwich that is, that was created in Jacksonville. And it is, it's called a Rider, which is
a Peter Rider.
My
family's like half of my family's Lebanese, so I totally know about the Riders.
Okay.
But continue to tell the audience.
A Peter Rider, you can get them at places called Famous Sandwiches and The Sheik.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two unique Jacksonville restaurants. So like there are a lot of delis that you will find a Rider, which is a pita with lunch meat, Italian vinaigrette dressing, and sometimes tabbouleh.
Mm-hmm. Oh God! Yeah,
that is the signature Jacksonville sandwich.
I was propositioned for marriage in the drive-through at the Sheik when I was like 12. Like it was me and my mom, because like my mom's Greek, and like her brother is married to a Lebanese woman, so like you know all about the Mediterranean food. And we're in the drive-through, and then the guy was like, "How old is your daughter?" And we were like, "No, man. Like not old enough." Wow.
I mean, the thing I do miss about eating meat was that I would run through a drive-through at Famous Sandwiches, and the men were very good-looking to me.
Oh God, yes.
Lots of hair on the forearm.
Mm-hmm.
Very swarthy.
Yeah.
You know, it's misgendering. I wouldn't let anybody else call me brother man, but I let them call me brother man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about the South. No matter what, you're getting misgendered. You know, like
constantly.
And kind of, sort of condescended to, like the sweetheart and the darling, and like you know, and like my husband and I were in line at a Crystal's, and like he got called baby, and I was like, fuck yeah.
Oh, I love it. Well, recently I was down in Miami, and I don't speak good Spanish. We are at a Cuban deli in Miami, and I asked the lady for some butter for my bread, and I heard her call me princess in Spanish. She said, "Princess needs butter."
Mm-hmm.
And I was living.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. I was trying to read it in Spanish. I was trying to read it off my translator, and I haven't decided if that's worse or.
I've been learning, but cool. Well, it has been totally amazing to speak to you. I'm really glad that we started talking about DA on Instagram, and now we got this really fun interview. And
can't throw a stone.
Yeah, can't throw a stone. We've been talking to BB Deluxe. You can check out her music on Bandcamp, and you're on Spotify? Yes, you are on Spotify.
I'm on Spotify.
And
I'm
Bandcamp.
On Apple Music.
Apple Music.
Yeah. And Google Play.
Mm, lovely. Cool.
I know.
All right. So, well, thank you for talking to us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Have a good quarantine.
Yeah, it's all good.
Okay. Good night.
All right.
Bye.
Good night. Thank you so much.
Yeah, bye. Only guacamole.
Yep.
That was a great interview.
Then we had guacamole the other day.
We did.
That was really good.
You put olives in it, though. That's weird.
Oh, I mean, for the olives, just be eating on the side of kind of like a little snack and you put it in there. It was just a good space for it to be at for snacking, you know. Finger snacks.
Welcome back to KBOO.
Yeah. Hi.
That was our interview with BB Deluxe.
Yeah.
We're going to play one of her tracks now.
Yeah.
The song is called Cracking Up, and you can find it on Bandcamp and Spotify.
Ooh, I should put that on my laughing mix.
Oh, I don't think there's any laughing on it.
Oh, okay.
We'll see. Let's take a listen. Okay.
All right.
Yep.
She'll flip a switch. That's what you get when you love a crazy bitch. Yo, what's the sitch? She'll flip a switch. That's what you get when you love a crazy bitch. When you first came in my world, I was the queen of your castle. Now every time we try to smash, it seems like such a hassle. Cause I'm an asshole, a fucking rascal. I try to keep it sweet, but every word seemed like a mouthful. Vinegar and piss. What the hell did I miss? How did we end up like this? We used to reminisce. Now we both stare in the abyss. We just feel so dang dismissed. Can we just make up and kiss? How the hell did this happen? Can we go back to laughing instead of emotional trapping? I admit I am slacking cause my brain be attacking. The serotonin I'm lagging. Face the shit that keeps stacking up. Them shitty thoughts that keep racking up. Why? Can't you tell I've been cracking up? Can't you tell I've been cracking up? Something about this ain't adding up. Why? Can't you tell I've been cracking up? Why? Can't you tell I've been cracking up? No, no. Something about this ain't adding up. No, no. Why can't you tell I've been cracking up? Why? Can't you tell I've been cracking up? Why? Can't you tell I've been cracking up? No, no. Something about this ain't adding up. No, no, no. Why can't you? Brain is patient zero and my words are the disease. I'm a beggar on my knees. Piano full of broken keys. Will you ever leave? Or should I relieve your tired aching heart from the burden of me? Can't face it cause I'm not ready to go. But like that man or the man said, say it ain't so. Say it ain't so. Say it ain't so. Say it ain't so. Trapping. I admit I am slacking cause my brain be attacked. The serotonin I'm lagging. Face the shit that keeps stacking up. Them shitty thoughts they keep racking up. Why? Can't you tell I've been cracking up? Why? Can't you tell I've been cracking up? Something about this ain't adding up. Why? Can't you tell I've been cracking up? Why? Why can't you tell I am cracking up with eyes?
I'm like really coffee today.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
It's all that weed. It's all that weed, yo. It's not that. Yeah, I'm not sick. It's the weed.
Weed.
Don't tell my mom. So yeah, you just heard Blunt Bangs with the song Odessa. This is our bonus episode of our Winterland coverage. Blunt Bangs was supposed to play.
Yeah.
But they were not able to make it, unfortunately, which a big unfortunately because we're friends with everyone in that band and we miss them dearly.
Yeah.
Also featuring our former roommate.
Yes.
Ray, one of our best roommates ever.
Ray was fun.
Ray was great. But yeah, that's Blunt Bangs. That's an unreleased track, but hopefully they will have that album out soon because it's a banger. Everyone in that band is stupid talented and stupid. Yeah, no, they're not stupid. They're cute. We have another unreleased track next. It was sent to me by Hot Tension.
Ooh.
If any of y'all listening are really into the live streaming thing that everyone's been doing, Hot Tension does really cool happy hours on, I think, Monday. I don't know what days are anymore.
Days are tricky.
But you can follow them on Instagram and they will post about it. And they're really fun. They have a little cocktail, play some records, play some jams.
Mm-hmm.
Great
Say
people.
Hi.
And then you get to look at how cool they are.
Yeah.
They're so cool.
They're cool. And they're in Florida. It's all
in
nice
Florida. Yeah, it looks really nice.
Yeah.
They have a really nice backyard.
Mm.
Yep. So, yeah, this song is an unreleased track by Hot Tension called Surfin' in the MIA.
Ooh.
And this will conclude our Winterland bonus episode.
Yeah.
Tune in tomorrow night to hear Volume 2 featuring interviews with Pastel Palms, A Place to Bury Strangers.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Who else did we talk to that day? Oh, Corduroy, adorable, and the festival organizers, Glenn and Lena. It's going to be a great show.
Yeah.
Have a good night. Kaboo.
Mm-hmm.